persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
The death of the heroic. And by the way, thanks to all of you who think of me when you notice something that interests you and you forward it to me. I appreciate it. I can't respond to all of these for reasons I trust are obvious, but please do not think I'm not mindful and appreciative of the thoughtfulness. And by the way, very, very often I mark some of these for use in the show, but once the show gets underway, it kind of takes on a life of its own and goes, it just ends up in an interesting place. I mean, good night. Most of the time, 80% of what I plan to talk about, I don't get to. It ends up just sitting there in my resource file. Anyway, there are times when I do get to use something that caught my interest, and that happened with this particular item. Joan, thank you for forwarding 30 Seconds Over Tokyo, the final toast. The 80 brave men who flew the first air attack mission over Tokyo after Pearl Harbor were called Doolittle's Raiders. After Pearl, it was strongly felt that Japan needed to learn quickly that we could get to them. A plan was set afoot to launch bombers from a carrier, and that's something that at that time had never been done. And it was critical that they would launch near enough Japan to allow a chance, at least, for the planes to deliver their payload and make it deep enough into China to find a safe place to land. Well, unfortunately, the Japanese got wind of the pending attack, so we had to launch prematurely. And that meant the crews would be unable to deliver their payload with any real hope of finding a place to put down safely. Well, of course, in the good old American spirit, they went anyway and delivered their attack on Tokyo. And this put Japan on notice that we could penetrate their airspace, and we intended to do whatever it would take to win this war. Well, this heroic mission inspired Americans. I mean, you couldn't mention the Raiders or Doolittle without stirring some deep emotions of honor and appreciation and deep feelings of patriotism. Their courage inspired the MGM movie 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. Of the 80 original Raiders, 62 survived the war. In 2013, there were only 5 survivors remaining. And then Tim Griffin died at 96 years of age. After successfully bombing Tokyo, Captain Griffin bailed out of his plane over a mountainous Chinese forest. He got malaria and nearly died. Well, after he recovered from this, he was sent to fly combat missions in Europe. He was shot down, captured, and spent 22 months in a German prisoner of war camp. You know, these pathetic little Brucies of today couldn't handle such hardships. They whine about everything. Anyway, Captain Griffin did not pine away and beg to die and attempt suicide to end all the pain. He just dug in and endured and survived and enjoyed many years of life with his dear wife and then faced the ordeal of surviving a spouse and earlier when his wife had become ill and had to be placed into a nursing home. He visited her every day. He walked from his house to the nursing home, fed his dear wife, and then at the end of the day brought home her clothes, washed, ironed them, and so on, and then repeated that the next day, every day, for 3 years, until she died. As far as I know, no one ever heard him complain. Why? He didn't shirk his responsibilities. Wasn't that kind of guy, you see. Responsibility defined him. Character is what you call that, Brucey. Character. He did not think, you know, this wife of mine, she's such a burden. Her life really isn't all that much. I mean, she basically lives here in this nursing home. She's done. Why, the Greeks would say, hey, honey, it's time for a little hemlock cocktail. Drink this so I don't have to be burdened with you anymore. No, these were men, and we've forgotten what that is. We certainly have in California. Heroism is dying in this country. No appreciation for suffering. No appreciation for the valor of sacrifice for a good cause, for enduring hardness in this life. Life is held so cheaply today. California wants to decide who can kill themselves. Under what conditions individuals can choose the hemlock way out. They want to be sophisticated like those Greeks, you know, were about these things. You know, the same people who worship Thor and Zeus and all that. California legislation is all about, let's let them kill themselves, you know. In fact, let's give them a hand. Now, state legislation would, quote, allow terminally ill Californians to end their lives with doctor-prescribed drugs passed the Senate on Thursday. So who do these fellows think they are? I mean, they think they are, what, God? You know, they're going to decide under what conditions you can kill yourself with doctor's help. If you're terminally ill, a doctor can prescribe a drug to you that will kill you and thereby, you know, save California a lot of hospital care money. You know, save Obamacare a lot of money, save a lot of Social Security money. I mean, what happened to the honor of battling that enemy death? God says that that death is our enemy, not our friend. And battling that enemy to the end has always been a valorous and a battle of honor. The stories of heroic struggle honors life for all others living. To view death as a solution to your problems, especially to things like your depression, and so it's dangerous, my friend. Anytime someone is driven to seek death, to view death as a solution to whatever problems they're facing, well, that's a mistake, and it's the kind of mistake you cannot recover from. Societies that see death as a solution, well, that would be like Hitler's Germany. Euthanasia is back in style, boys. Death is chosen rather than life. Think about this. You know, no one can stop you from killing yourself. I mean, if you're determined to do it, there are thousands of ways to do it. So why do you want to legalize suicide? Why do you want to make it something done under the sanction of law? Why do you want to involve the law in the whole thing? Who's going to stop you? I mean, if you are really determined to do it. But no, you've got to make it legalized suicide, like you did with abortion. You got to drag the law into it. You got to give it the sanction of law. We used to say God is the only one who has the right to decide when we die. We would say, well, it's in the hands of the Lord, or it's in the hands of God. Now we want to say, no, each individual decides that on their own. It used to be that God decided your gender, but now we want the right to decide our own. It used to be that God defined marriage and declared the marriage bed to be undefiled, but now we want to define marriage any way we choose, and we delight to defile it at every turn. In fact, you vomit liquors. Like to watch other men and women engage in what God designed exclusively for a husband and wife, you know, like it's entertainment. Why don't you just, you know, set up some chairs around your own bed, offer some soda pop and popcorn, and invite your neighbors to come in and watch for a buck. What a pack of dogs. Oh, wait a minute. You can watch other men and women, but no one's supposed to invade your privacy, so it's public if it's someone else, but private when it's you and yours, hypocrites. Anyway, California wants to tell our schools they must promote homosexuality to our children, but you had better not be encouraging any Bible reading. I mean, imagine that. You don't want to mention the Ten Commandments. And California wants to decide when and under what circumstances you can kill yourself. They want to give the sanction of law to the act of suicide. So, hey, California, who made you God? You understand what I'm saying, I think. People are being looked at more and more as if they're animals. They kill horses, don't they? And very often, you know, and I think appropriately, we take financial matters into consideration when we're making decisions about whether, well, you know, to spend $20,000 on an operation that would maybe save the life of your cat, or go ahead and just put it down and end its suffering. So why don't we just look at humans the same way? And who gets to have that power to make those decisions? Do you see where this is going? See, you get God out of the picture and, oh my, the devil becomes God. You see, God put those creatures into our hands and make those sorts of decisions for them. However, our lives are in his hands, and he has insisted upon that. He has not given us the power to make that decision for ourselves or for anyone else for that matter. And my friends, the first step toward Auschwitz is euthanasia. And the California Assembly just took it. The first step toward giving government the power to decide when it's time for you to receive your hemlock cocktail is when you take that decision from God into your own hands and then turn to the government to trump God's law. Yeah, use man's law to trump God's law, to take the place of God in your life. Go ahead and make government God. Watch what happens when it decides it is. You see, you're not only personally taking from God his divine role as life-giver, who commanded that the only provision for man to take the life of man is in the case where a man has willfully taken the life of another. Well, what you're doing is you're asking the law of man to usurp and contradict the law of God. I mean, it's Nimrod all over again. And when you do this, it's one simple step from there to the government stepping into the place of God and looking at you like you're their pet dog or cat. You know, a government pet kept in their zoo. And deciding, well, you know, since Obamacare and Medi-Cal are going to be way overburdened with the prolonged care of all these old fellas coming up, whose usefulness is very limited or gone, well, you know, just think about it. The reasonable thing to do is hand them the hemlock and then insist they drink it for the good of the people. Belgium, a tale of slippery slopes and dying folks. In an article I'm reading here, Belgium chose death, you know, decided to take death out of the hand of God and put it into the hands of individuals legally. It's important to distinguish, you know, between individuals arrogantly presuming to take their lives into their own hands, as we say, and then the government being given the power to step in and approve and even assist in this act of defiance. You know, another example of the government stepping in to take the place of God in the lives of the people. So Belgium went that route, and in about 1 year, I think something like 31 people were killed without a person's request. That is, against their requests. You see, what happens is the doctors or family assess the situation and decide, look, you know, it's just better for all of us that the grandma dies, you know? And when it's about someone else's grandma, or when you are, you know, one of those selfish individuals who despises the heroism of sacrifice and shared suffering, you know, one of these who lives only for personal pleasure and ease and spurns anything that would put you in a position to have to endure some hardness, well, because that's not your thing, you know? And you're looking at 3 to 5 years of being locked up in a house with a mom or a dad who doesn't even remember who you are. Well, it's the easy way out to say, here, mom, here, dad, have some hemlock. You know, but heroes choose to put their responsibilities over their convenience. They accept hardness and heroically soldier on, enduring the pain and sharing in the suffering of their loved ones. That's what heroes do. That's what people do who value life and value the lives of those they love. They inspire us with stories like this Captain Griffin, who walked from his home to the nursing home to visit his dear wife every day for 3 years, always there to feed her her evening meal, to collect her clothes, to take them home and wash them and return the next day and repeat the cycle every day for 3 years. Faithful, dedicated, a story of love, of honor, of sacrifice, and a willingness to endure hardness to take care of his responsibilities. These are the sorts of men who endure the hardness of war, the suffering of hardship, who, knowing the prospects of surviving are slim, volunteer to take it on anyway. And my concern is that the generation we are developing in this country now is one that rejects the value of heroic suffering, of sacrifice for the cause of duty, of enduring hardness in a selfless cause. We're creating a generation of selfish, soft, self-serving, self-centered Brucies who defy the whole concept of divine duty, of a call to hardness, of a life of sacrifice, and they demand, therefore, that everyone around them sacrifice well to them. Warning, warning, brilliant burst of insight about to explode in your mind. You know, like an EMP, it'll short-circuit the entire network of lies Satan has labored to construct in your mind over the past 10 years. And here it is. Those who refuse to sacrifice for others always demand from others the most sacrifice. A generation of demanders can only implode upon itself. A generation of takers can only end up having stripped itself and everyone around it of all dignity and leaving them naked with nothing but themselves. You know, selfishness is that one-way road to a dead end, and when you get there, you're all alone. Think about it. The girl gets pregnant, and immediately everyone around her, you know, all the little Brucies who cannot accept divinely appointed responsibility or limitations, they go into vapors over how inconvenient this is going to be, how this pregnancy is going to interfere with my life, and the baby's going to be an imposition upon my plans to my life. And so we can't look to God, you know. Are you kidding? You don't look to God because, well, he's going to expect you to endure the hardness, to take on the suffering, to suffer the loss of independence, of freedom, and perhaps even to let a dream or two die in the dust of your failure, your immoral failure. Let my dreams die? No way, the baby must die. Not my dreams. My baby dies, but not my dreams. And what is particularly interesting here is that they demand independence from God and from duty and from moral restraints and so on, the natural consequence of which is to position them to end up paying for that stolen independence with an imposed dependence. That's what happens. That stolen permissiveness with imposed restraints and a bondage to duty in the care of the child because you broke from your duty in the care of God. Those who refuse to accept their own responsibility to endure personal sacrifice always demand the most sacrifice from everyone around them. And it's always, it seems, out of proportion to the sacrifice they refuse. Or in other words, they always demand a greater sacrifice from others to serve them in their avoidance of the sacrifice they were called upon to make on behalf of others. That's true of treason. That's true of deserters. You think it through. It's always the case. Now think about this. When this trend comes to full fruition in our culture, will there be anyone willing to lay down their lives for the freedom of their own countrymen, much less that of others, in a foreign land? And finally, will they have the courage to stand up for their own liberties in the end? I mean, if we were faced with a tyrant who was undermining our liberties as free Americans, would there be enough real men of the caliber of Captain Griffin or the founders who understand personal sacrifice, who understand enduring hardness for a cause, who understand suffering on behalf of someone or some cause greater than themselves, who would stand up to such a tyrant? One wonders. Hold on to the break. I'll be right back.
The Bible and the Bill of Rights, Sunday night, 6 p.m., beginning July 5th at the Lighthouse. Pastor Scheidbach will begin a series of 5 messages showing the direct relationship between the Bible and the Bill of Rights. July 5th, following the message, you're invited to a red, white, and blue cobbler delight baked by Santa Maria's own Emily Campbell, known for her dessert-alicious creations. Enjoy bluegrass music and get a chance to rub elbows with Pastor Scheidbach. You know, put a face to the voice you've heard all these years and get an answer to that nagging Bible question you've had for so long. Fun, food, fellowship, and freedom, now that's a Santa Maria-style get-together. Sunday night, July 5 at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. I can taste that hot cobbler already.
Encounter God. The word means to meet, to experience, to confront. How would you like to encounter God in 2015? Maybe it's been a while since you've experienced God in a meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year. Or maybe you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015 and know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedaravia Road, Santa Maria. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. Kerry had some very fine things to say about our determination to, quote, keep moving forward toward our shared goal of justice and equality for all, end quote. Whew, rousing words. And by the way, thank you, David Baskett, for sharing this press statement from the Secretary of State issued May 16, 2015. I found it very illuminating. He pledged to the world, quote, our commitment to the equality and dignity of all people, end quote, all people, you see, and rousingly asserted that, quote, human rights, end quote, are, quote, fundamental, end quote. He recognizes that many communities continue to face, quote, discriminatory laws and practices, end quote, that, quote, attack, end quote, the, quote, dignity, end quote, of persons targeted for persecution, undermining their, quote, safety, end quote, and violating the, quote, human rights, end quote, and warns that this trend seems to be increasing. And in view of that, he calls on us all and pledges to all his intent to, quote, oppose this rising tide of violence and discrimination, end quote. Oh my, you can sense in these words his passion. His soul is stirred like the wise man made mad by the oppressor. He avers that standing against this, quote, rising tide, end quote, is, quote, absolutely the right thing to do. But beyond that, greater protection of human rights also leads to greater stability and prosperity, end quote. Hear, hear! Our Secretary of State speaks boldly, inspiring, vigorous in his appeal when he says, quote, the United States remains unwavering in our commitment to advance the human rights, end quote, of, quote, persons here at home and around the world, end quote. Finally, a spokesperson for the downtrodden, the persecuted, Kerry must have received the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom report, and no doubt with us is appalled at what's going on in India. Quote, in its latest report released in late April, the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom specifically noted concerns about the operation of Hindu nationalist groups and forced conversion programs, as well as their attacks on churches and their hate campaigns against religious minorities, end quote. And we should be grateful that our State Department has finally taken notice of this sort of persecution against innocent people, against the 2 Christian pastors facing potential death in Sudan right now. These dear men have been imprisoned for their faith in 2014. in Sudan, and recently they were moved to what Jay Sekulow says is described as, quote, a dangerous new high-security prison, end quote, and here they can receive no visitors, and they're isolated and alienated from any contact, and it's believed this indicates an intention to kill them. So the story of how these religious men, these Christians, were arrested for absolutely no crime except that they are Christians, oh, has finally and really fired up old Vietnam Kerry. Wow, is he stirred up? Maybe he caught the report by CNN on the Christians being persecuted by ISIS in Iraq, or perhaps the recent Newsweek article published here in April. At least it acknowledges with some sympathy and concern the persecution that's going on against the Christians in Iraq by ISIS. I mean, the gross violations of their human rights has certainly roused our Secretary of State to step forward and make such a bold proclamation. Of course, it's true, he referenced his concern within the context of the 1948 UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and we would have preferred he resorted to our own declaration where it says all men are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, but he refers to this UN Declaration of Human Rights, which has been amended, I think, 26 articles, and articles 22 to 26 are essentially declarations of the idea that humans have a right to expect their government to take care of them, but that's for another show. But I did find these articles within this Declaration of Human Rights. Article 1, all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. So there's at least some endowment here, but no acknowledgement of God. And Article 2, everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth or other status. And it goes on in Article 3, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. In Article number 18, everyone has the right to freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. This right includes freedom to change his religion or belief, and freedom, either alone or in community with others, and in public or private, to manifest his religion or belief in teaching, practice, worship, observance, and so on. And in Article 19, everyone has the right to freedom of opinion and expression. This right includes freedom to hold opinions without interference, and to seek, receive, and impart information and ideas through any media regardless of frontiers. And so surely Kerry's concerned about all the people in the world right now who are being persecuted in violation of this Declaration of Rights. And we're refreshed by his acknowledgement that there is a, quote, rising tide, end quote, of persecution against Christians around the world, and especially in Iraq by ISIS. And it is so refreshing that our Secretary of State, Vietnam Kerry, is concerned about the Christian women who are being raped and the Christian children being beheaded before the eyes of their parents, who, refusing nevertheless to convert to Islam, are then crucified or beheaded, not to speak of the milder forms of abuse that's routinely perpetrated against these people when they're told they must leave their homes or face execution, where they're impressed against their will into the service of their oppressors, where their property is taken and their persons abused by these Islamist jihadis. Finally, a Secretary of State who gets it, who will speak up for the oppressed, for the abused, for the persecuted. But wait a minute. Hold on here. I quoted Kerry word for word, you know. But in order to make the point I'm about to drop upon you, I do admit I purposely left out certain parts of his press release. His rousing, inspired declarations about justice for all, quote-unquote, and equality, quote-unquote, and his passionate protestations against discrimination had nothing at all to do with Christians being brutally oppressed by ISIS and in India and in Sudan and elsewhere, right in our faces every day. Oh no, he was talking about the LGBT crowd here in America, who, aghast, suffer at the hands of a Christian baker who refuses to make a cake for their homosexual marriage, whose persecution here is when an owner of a Christian company merely expresses the opinion that homosexuality is wrong and that homosexual marriage is wrong. Biden, who never said a word of rebuke or denunciation against ISIS for their persecution of Christians that I can find, is everywhere reported to have recently said, quote, in too many places, LGBT community members face religious condemnation. When will we have leaders who will say, in too many places in the world, Christians face religious condemnation? In fact, Christians are being persecuted right here in the name of homosexuality. It's the homosexuals who are persecuting us and not the other way around. Obama uses his usurped imperial presidential powers to, quote, command certain faith-based organizations to hire homosexuals, end quote. And remember, Obama's attorney declared to the Supreme Court justices that if they decide homosexual marriage is a fundamental human right, even though it is contrary to nature and to nature's God, well, there will be serious implications against Christian businesses and churches. Now, folks, you watch this ruling. These justices know exactly what is going to happen if they rule in favor of the homosexual agenda. You see, that agenda is entirely incompatible with the Christian faith. They cannot occupy the same space, and it will not be because Christians will not tolerate them. No, au contraire, we've tolerated them only too much, to be quite frank about it. It will be because homosexuality is by design, contrary to God and to nature, and intuitively resents any impediment to their will. Godlike homosexual activists demand absolute surrender to their will and to their pleasure, or they attack and abuse and bully. America, you have turned your back on God, so be prepared to meet your new masters. That's what God always does, you know. You turn your back on him, you refuse his rule, well, he releases you to be ruled by masters of your own choosing. And you are choosing to be mastered by a tiny minority of homosexuals who are tyrannical in their demands, refusing to allow you freedom of religion or freedom of opinion, even, or freedom of association for that matter. You dare not blaspheme your new gods, America, your new rulers. You dare not resist their will. Meet your new masters, America, and then weep before the throne of the Almighty. He will perhaps take pity on you and deliver you from these wicked and unreasonable men. Obama is determined to force our acceptance of homosexuality, and he intends to persecute Christians who object or resist. Are things upside down or what? Obama thinks global warming and resistance against the homosexual agenda are the two most critical and important issues we face today. And then there's this, his latest insult to the Jewish people. Did you hear his latest insult to the Jewish community? He recently claimed that he is the nearest thing we've ever had to a Jewish president. Man, what a joke. We need a miracle. We need God to give us one of those rend the heavens and come down moments. This Sunday night's Issachar Report will be, according to the Bible, what sort of president should we look for? And remember to set aside July 5th at 6 p.m. and join us for my kickoff message for a new series titled The Bible and the Bill of Rights. Now, these messages are carefully prepared, so we'll begin at 6 p.m. and with all of our patriotic music and all that, we'll be in the dining hall somewhere between 7 and 7:15. And each Sunday evening during July, we've arranged to serve up one of Emily's dessert-alicious creations. And in honor of the 4th, July 5th, she'll be presenting her Independence Day red, white, and blue dessert. It's a hot cobbler with red strawberries, creamy white whipped cream, and sweet blueberries, red, white, and blue, and buttery and scrumptious. Anyway, on July 5 at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse, following the exciting patriotic message on the Bible and the Bill of Rights, you'll be treated to our famous Santa Maria-style hospitality, some down-home patriotic music, a chance to rub elbows with a brain masseur, and put a face to that voice you've heard all these years, and to engage me in some fun and informative Q&A. As Tom says, fun, food, fellowship, and freedom. Now that's a Santa Maria-style get together. July 5, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. And now you call and let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. It is a free call to anyone within the continental United States. From outside the country, or for those who prefer it, you can email me by going to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. That's thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll find a place there to write me an email. If you're in a hurry when you call, just say lights on or lights off and hang up. But please give me a call. Let me know what you think of the show, positive or negative. Either way, God bless you and God save America. And I'll see you in church.
For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturday at 12 noon